Widget and my man Pro V.
All the way live from University.
Damn, Montreal. On CKUT. Nobody do it better, dog.
90.3 FM.
CKUT and the place to be from the bottom to the TOP.
This program is uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.
All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday from 3 to 5. This is Pro V. Thank you very much for tuning in. Today's show is a continuation from last week, so interview with D Shade from Shades of Culture. Last week was part one, this week is part two. So during the show last week, we probably got up until, you know, Shades of Culture time, kind of did the history of Shades. And so when we start this one, the conversation kind of starts off where we start talking about collabos and other things. You'll hear it, but just to put you in the right, you know, frame of time. And following the interview, it'll be available up on my SoundCloud, so pro-v-2 up on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/pro-v-2. And enjoy the show, enjoy the stories. Big shout out to D-Shade once again. Thank you very much for everything, man, all your time, and just, you know, taking the time to give us some history, both the D-Shade history and the Shades of Culture history, and letting us know what went on in the city even before that was going on throughout the 80s. Thank you. Hope everybody enjoys the show. All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM. Peace. Yeah. And so let's talk about all the, like, you did a lot of collab, you know, you're talking about that collabo with Sadat X.
Yeah.
And you guys did a lot of, like, not just Shades, but you personally did a lot of collabos with artists that we all grew up listening to. So why don't you talk about that for a minute and talk about, you know, those people.
With artists and producers that either I've been wanting to work with or it just, you know, just happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got to work, you know, with Buckshot for my album. We got to actually go to New York to their studio across from MSG to actually record it. So that in itself was an experience.
Yeah.
It was during the biggest snowstorm New York had ever seen, you know? So, and that, you know, that was a pleasure. And, you know, I've worked with, DJ A-Track, obviously, on a song called Space and Time, which came out on Audio Research on one of their mixtapes as well. Kid is nuts. The cuts on there are bananas. I love it. I love it. You know, I got, again, played a lot of shows as well.
There was some other collabos I'm forgetting about.
Well, I did a lot of collabos with some artists from here, like Velvet Trench Vibes.
Yeah.
AKA Cannonhead, Aspen and Nero.
Yeah.
Yeah, we clicked up for a while. We hung out a lot and, you know, just appreciated each other's art and whatnot. I've also worked with a few live bands like Power Up First and Plaster. Got to go to France, you know, a couple of times, you know, through those guys as well. Also Stack Mula.
Yeah.
Stack produced that Buckshot track that we're on. And then there's a remix with Similac did the remix for it. So it's just, you know,
family,
just
family
names that we just mentioned before. Yeah. Family, and the Blue Rum 13 was on that, you know. So Blue Rum also worked with, well, he was part of Bullfrog. He worked with Kid Koala a lot, DJ Vadim and Russian Percussion. He's traveled a lot. He's on that joint as well.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
And you did a lot of work with Buddha Blaze as well.
Yeah, well, the whole album got structured and built.
The Water Principle.
Yeah, the Water Principle got built at Buddha Blaze's. Like, another one of my favorite features is with Narcissist, which is They Want It All and Omar Effendim.
Yeah.
That was really fun. We did a video for that as well.
That's the Pulp Fiction video for people who don't know. Incredible video where they had it's like, where do you start? So you're playing Samuel L. Jackson, Narcy's playing
Vincent Vega,
and you guys are talking
Omar,
about
Omar plays
everything's related to Montreal. It's like a Montreal Pulp Fiction video, and you guys really structured that whole thing well. Like, I'm curious to know, like, you guys just brainstorm for that, or did somebody come to the table and say, "Yo, we got to do this"? Like,
no, me and Narcy wrote all. We watched the movie a few times, and then, you know, replaced, you know, certain scenes with
Royale with cheese and a poutine.
Yeah, exactly.
And all kinds of stuff. You got Lowe's in the video, 80 Rock in the video. 80
Rock, yeah.
Buddha Blaze is the wolf.
Omar Effendim is...
Jimmy. That's a good one.
Fun. And, you know, speaking of those guys, just, you know, accomplished, you know, artists and producers, you know, in their own right. Like, you know, 80 Rock is on a tear right now.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? I was just at the Magnum launch a couple of weeks ago. Wow.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. That was fun.
That was fun.
Great album.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Water Principle, man. What year was that? That was 2011?
Yeah, 2011. That actually came out, so it got started way earlier than 2011, and while I was recording, my mom passed, so I had to put that on hold, and, you know, just get my bearings again, and came back and finished it. So, you know, I got the second half of it, I got to, you know, record with Buckshot and, you know, finish the last few songs on there, and just get it out. But yeah, if I didn't have, you know, Buddha Blaze and those guys on me to keep going, yeah, it might have taken longer, but there's actually some Buddha Blaze production on there too.
Yeah, definitely.
My boy Metrics, who's in the Six now, he did some production on there, like the first, yeah.
And the They Want It All, that was Jesus Rice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesus, I haven't seen him in a minute, bro.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Seen him a couple months back.
Yeah, he blessed me. Yeah, he blessed me with that one, man.
Yeah, man. Did you plan on doing any other video? Like, was there any other videos, or was just that one?
It was
from that album.
It was just that one. There is a video from something that wasn't released of mine, More to Say. It's floating around out there online. That's filmed in DG2.
Okay,
I'll send you the link after.
Yeah, show me the link after.
Black and white style, shot around the hood, and then there was just one video for the Water Principle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, because that first video was so good. It's like, I feel like you guys could have done a continuation of that kind of theme, or I don't know what, you know. It was.
It's true. Yeah. Like, yeah, we could have probably done something like that with the
good piece of art. I guess that's what I'm trying to say, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, man.
Yeah. And I guess, like, you know, talking about collabos and stuff, you were on the second Dubmatique album.
Yeah, yeah.
And you could see a nice live music plus performance of you guys.
Oh yeah,
If you go look it up.
Yeah.
So yeah, talk about that one, man.
Yeah, I'm actually on two songs on there. I'm on one of the hooks, and then yeah, a full song with Elminer and Dubmatic.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that obviously came about because of choice, and he had a vision in mind, and it, you know, made it happen. That was, yeah, again, it was always been a pleasure to work on, you know, with choice and you know, be part of, you know, what he's been doing. And you know, shout out to Dubmatic as well.
What was it like performing at Music Plus back in those times when, you know, everybody's tuning in to TV and it's not like there was no, like, internet was very young at that moment, so there wasn't a lot of stuff you could find, let alone go watch videos, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What helped performing at Music Plus was that the fact that they would let, like, a few, you know, have a few people in there, you know, maybe 10, 15 people, just some faces to interact with, and and yeah, so it's like playing a small show, but then you get to play with the cameras, right? You have to play with the cameras wherever they are, and they make sure that they get their angles. So they'll let you know where the cameras are, and you just play to them. It's different. It's different, but it's usually for one song. It's never a full concert. You know what I mean? So yeah, I like performing anywhere.
Yeah,
you know.
You ever get to perform on much music?
Yeah, so for Master T, actually.
Oh,
he invited us down. He did an interview with us.
Was that on Rap City or the Mix? Or,
I think it was
just the regular Mix. Regular pro. Because sometimes they would do it during regular program.
It was live on Saturday. Was the Mix, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was on the Mix.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we drove up there. Storm got us there in like 4.5 hours. We had a Mustang. And there was nobody on the road, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
That was amazing. You know, at the time, you know, Master T was the voice of urban music at the time.
Yeah, across the whole country.
Across the whole country. Yeah. So, you know, for us to get, you know, called in and to perform, and Sosa was with us, that's what I mean, you know. Always with us, it was a pleasure, and it, you know, it just solidified us as, you know, as a staple in the hip hop culture in Canada.
Yeah,
just him. We got, you know, we got the endorsement. We got the sign off.
What did you guys perform on the show?
And we did Shine.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was that like before Mind State came out, or after?
It was part of promotion for it. So it was like a promo
run for the album.
Yeah.
And were they already, was the Mind State single getting spin at that time?
Yeah, the Mind State single was, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't even perform Mind State, you're just like, nah, we're going to do Shine and show them something different.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah, because we had Lennon with us, right? We had Sosa with us. Yeah. I don't remember, did we do two songs?
I never seen that.
No,
that's not up on YouTube, is it?
No, but yeah, it might be. I'll check and I'll see if I can find it. Because otherwise, Ryan's got it on VHS.
I hope so, man. I gotta
digitize
that. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So, what else? What else has been going on? Because, I mean, you guys did a track with... you guys came back and did another track since the Water Principle album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Hip-hop shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, hip-hop shit. Yeah, so that was part of, the last little project that we did, the three songs.
Mm-hmm.
We filmed that in New York through with my boy Olis Farrell, who used to live out here. He's been out in New York for a minute now. Mm-hmm. He shot that, conceptualized the whole nine for us, and you know, that was another fun video to shoot, just because we were in NY. You know, it took us a few hours to do it, but.
Away from home and a new setting,
And that's how we were able to figure out the Sadat X thing as well, because we got the Sadat X hookup after we shot the video.
Okay,
we just held the video till everything was ready.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we got the hookup for Sadat. He sent us his vocals, true professional style, took no time.
And Sadat.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. What else has been going on in the D-Shade music world since the Water Principle?
Since Water Principle, like I said, there's a few collabs here and there, but right now I'm focusing on doing something new. I don't know if he told you, but me and Choice are working on a project right now as we speak.
Right.
We're two songs in, so when we get to the third, we'll start leaking. We'll let you hear some things, but again, 30-year relationship, still working together. It says something. The fact that he'd been out of the scene for a minute, right, out of the loop for a minute, and he's back.
Yeah.
And and it's funny because we're influenced by the same kind of things right now. New York Renaissance is huge. We differ a little on the stripped down beats, we're on the same level of thinking when it comes to some of the artists. Like, I listen to The Cloth all day, Ace on Eastwood, and Daniel Sun. Mm-hmm. I also listen to, stuff like Dave East, and a little smile comes to my face when I see, Vado putting out stuff again, And, it's interesting. Bars are back.
Yeah, man.
Bars are back.
But it must be dope to have one of your original partners back to make some music with.
From before
Shades even kind of popped off, right?
So. Yeah, we used to hang out at Centre de Danse in Longueuil when we weren't even close to producing and rapping. He was an accomplished b-boy, dope b-boy.
You guys were just trying to participate in the culture.
Look at us now. We're still here. Storm 2.
Yeah, man.
I mean, Storm Rev 2, but. The music is the magic. Music is the magic.
So you're working on stuff with Choice.
Anything
else you're working on?
Well, for now, I'm doing a lot of 3D animation, graphics, visual effects, and stuff on the side. Just like that, it's something that interests me, but. Yeah, just focusing right now on this project with Choice, letting him build slowly. I'm not rushing him, and so I'm just working on the tracks that we got and building out. So,
yeah, man,
that's the main focus right now.
That's good, man. That's good. He had let me know that you guys did a little bit of radio together at CKUT.
Yeah.
And he even sent me, the OG intro. Yeah, man. You, what do you remember from that?
Well, we had this, we had a radio show called Hitting Switches.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the worst slot ever. We had 3 to 6 in the morning. So actually it was like 3 to 6 in the morning. So after we'd leave our night at Voltaire, we had a night going on for about a year at Club Voltaire. So we'd finish there at 3 and have to run up to CKUT and do our show till 6 in the morning. But we feed off of each other, so, you know, we love the music and stuff, so it worked out really well. And when we first started, there were 3 of us, right? We had our boy William Perron, who was...
That's what I forgot to ask you about earlier, yeah, when we were talking about Do the Math and all that, yeah. But yeah, continue.
Yeah, so... basically, we got that slot for the radio show, and then we started loving it. Started loving it. Besides the late hours or whatever, it was all right. We were still feeding the culture, playing the music, mm-hmm. and it grew into something. And then when we couldn't do it anymore. Revolution and Pat Reck at the time, who had filled in for us a couple of times when we couldn't, they took over the show, and then that turned into Off the Hook with Buddha Blaze.
Yeah.
But
And Flo.
And it's all the same family, right?
And now I'm there.
Right?
Yeah, I've been there for like 9.5 years.
Exactly.
So you guys really, paved the way for these hip hop shows to.
But we just followed the lead of
of Flight and
LDG
and Butcher T,
Mike Mission and Stone.
Yeah,
all the people that were before us, and even guys like Ricky D had their radio show. I think he still does.
Still does, yeah.
And Donald D, Don Smooth, Don Smooth, that's, he's another pioneer in the city. He's been putting in work for years. So, yeah, man, you got shows lined up for years to come.
So what else, maybe something that I haven't, asked you about, or, something Montreal that, I don't know. Something that maybe you thought about before the interview, or maybe I'm going to talk about this, but that something I wouldn't know.
A lot. Yeah, we did cover a lot. I think. I was thinking about maybe the last. Show or tour we did, and it was probably with like a Herbalizer in 2000 and I want to say 4 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
And we toured across Canada. Herbalizer was looking for somebody to tour with, open up, and we took it right away.
So they were touring like what, the Very Mercenary album or something like that? Because they had some,
yeah, I think it was the
there's some good tracks on that album,
yeah. Yeah.
They had Jean Grey.
That's the one, yeah.
Before, so she was called What?
What?
At the time, before she was called Jean Grey. What was going on with that tour?
I was so happy to be on that tour, because, the beats, the Herbalizer, the music is incredible. Then we got to see them perform it, all the time. And actually... we had BU the Knowledgeist with us. He came as support with Billy Nova as well. So they were on the road with us and to do this Herbalizer thing. It was a blast.
So where'd you go to?
Did Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa. Ooh. the way to like Calgary, I think. And then came back home. Wasn't a long, extensive tour, but
musically, it was the one.
Yeah, it had to be there.
So that's like one of the most memorable like musical experiences, I guess.
Or? No, Bad Brains. Bad Brains by far. Bad Brains musical experience wise, even though it's a different genre.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. The experience, the musicians, how they play. Yeah, still to this day, it's ingrained.
Yeah.
Ingrained.
Where's the furthest spot that you guys like toured to? Like the,
I guess France.
Yeah.
France, Bermuda. You know, we did, you know, New York, and then we've been across Canada like, you know, 6-7 times back and forth. So we go across, leave a couple of cities out, and then come back and hit those on the way back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take care of gas or whatever, like yeah. Road warrior style, you know?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Man.
Yeah.
And one thing I always wanted to know is, like, let's say you guys toured a lot around Canada. How come you didn't collaborate with other, like, artists across the country?
So every time we get to some cities, we always, you know, look up the artists. Like, for example, when 6-2 and Buck 6-5 were doing their thing, like 6-2 had reached out to us. We went by the crib, tried to build something out, but nothing came of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess when we're on tour mode back then, we were just in tour mode, not really.
It's hard to sit down.
And we didn't have
a
lot of days off.
Yeah, it's hard to sit down and make music when you guys are putting most of your energy into touring.
Yeah, and then sound check, and you got to drive, you know, 6 hours or 15 hours. You don't know, so you don't always have time. But, you know, we stayed in touch with some of them, which is, yeah, speaking of collabs, the one I did with DL Incognito at Nine Planets Hip Hop, you know, it was Universal Love.
Mm-hmm.
That was another good collab that I like working on, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember digging through, you know, the online archives and stuff and seeing there was a record in Germany that was called Freestylist Worldwide.
Yeah.
And there's basically like every track on that, it's kind of like an EP or whatever, but every track is an artist from a different place around the world. And one of the tracks is called Shades of Culture, and I think it's featuring you guys, but I can't find it to download it anywhere. Like,
remember? You sent me.
Yeah. What do you know about that, man?
It's random. It's random. Have you heard it? I haven't heard it.
No, I haven't.
I haven't heard it. I just saw it when
Storm didn't really know much either. Kind of a mystery of a record.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out too. Like, since you sent it to me, I'm like, I just see it. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't hear it.
So, gotta order it and just find out. I probably said that during the Storm interview too, but. Gotta get that one.
Well, whoever finds it first, yo, let's share.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, so, you know, back to LDG for a minute. When LDG was spinning, like, you know, his name rang bells. I used to go to this place called Le Garage, and it was on the corner of Maisonneuve and Old Orchard, in the heart of DG. And it was what it was called. It was a garage, and you go there, and, you know, the top DJs of the city, you know, they would bring other artists into town, other DJs into town, and they'd spin till 6-7 in the morning. It was the original after hours, besides the club called Horoscope. So I got to see Grand Mixer DST one night, spinning with LDG, and then a couple other times it was just regular nights. But like I was saying before, these guys were bringing the new records and breaking them here in the city at these parties. So it was, yeah, groundbreaking. Now you can, you know, you can download it or whatever as soon as it comes out. But there's something about that, you know? And same thing with the Blockos behind Marymount. Because, like I said, I went to Marymount, but they did the block parties there too. So, and it was rammed. So people, you know, most people park outside. Some people bring their cars in. It looked like Crenshaw. Like, you know, where they're all lined up waiting for burgers and shit. And then right by the entrance, the back door entrance of the school is where they set up the DJ booth. And, you know, that's where it happened, man. Like, the magic would happen. These guys, and Scratch, you know, these guys were scratching. They'd set up over there. So you'd have, you know, the DJ Tough, Spec 2 crew, LDG, and Flight, obviously. And a whole bunch, you know, a bunch of DJs just running records and scratching. And yeah.
And what was the scene like at the Metro after?
Yo, just rammed. But everybody filling the Metro. Not a lot of issues. It was just like a flood of people going to the Metro.
The party was all up, or would it be kind of... How was the vibe at the party? Was it...
Oh, yeah, all love. All love.
And people, from all ends of the city, would people be coming around?
From West Island, South Shore, anywhere.
What about even the Francophone side of things, too?
So a lot of the Haitian community would come out, for sure. It would be a lot of the Haitian community, a lot of people that were just into the music and whatnot. And then, you hear your favorite music, stops at around 11, so there's no issues. And people go downtown or do whatever they want afterwards. People were talking about the after hours, but, you know, there were places like Horoscope on Sherbrooke and right near Peel, between Guy and Peel. It was a place you go in, you walk down the stairs, and it was like Checkers, open till 6 in the morning, but smaller. But original after hours, open till 6, 7 in the morning. This is like late 80s.
And did you ever participate in, like I heard in the 80s there were a lot of rap battles. Yeah. So was that something you came up in? Because to me, you're not really a battle MC.
Yeah.
More of a kind of like a general
MC.
But some people are really, whenever they rap, it's like they're going at someone's throat. You know what I mean?
And
you know what I mean? There's different of types of. So how was that? Were you coming up in that environment as well? Or were you just more of a, like, yeah, so.
Well, the environments, like, were mixed. It's like, it wouldn't just be battle rappers that would show up at an event, right? You'd have all kinds of rappers that, you know, can handle themselves or that can free, like, you know, go at the throat. Mm-hmm. Some guys are, you know, just spit bars. We all had to frequent the same space together. So the environment, was definitely mixed, but... You know, I came up around some of the, you know, battle rappers, like I said, Tape, Chuck, but I wasn't in any battles really back then. No.
Yeah.
No battles really. I was just focused on the music and enjoying the shit. But now it's a thing. Back then the rap battles, it was serious. These guys would prepare for each other.
Yeah. What's your favorite show that ever came to Montreal? Hip hop. Whether you were part of it or whether you were just vibing out. What do you think the your most memorable hip hop shows were in Montreal?
Naughty by Nature.
What year?
90. I want to say 98. And then.
So. With the Jamboree album? That time? Or Poverty's Paradise from 96?
96, yeah. Then you said Poverty's, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's a dope show. He came out with a chainsaw. The chainsaw and the big
chain gang,
big dirty chain on overalls. Yo, that, like, and Tretch, like, honestly, I like his flow. I like how he raps. I like Naughty, man. I like Naughty. Public Enemy and Gangstar. Those are probably, yeah, some of my favorite shows for sure. And, you know, I saw Rakim at the Belmont. That was like, oh, yeah.
Which one? From a few years ago?
Yeah, a few years ago.
I went to a Rakim show. I don't remember where it was, but it was a small venue on a Monday night, probably in 2007. Six, seven.
Really?
Yeah.
Here?
Here. Kid Capri was DJing for him.
It wasn't the Belmont show.
No, you were at telling that. You, small venue, like small on a what? Monday night. It was very random, but
people showed up.
Yeah, man, I have it on. I recorded on tape.
Wow.
So I could play it after. It's probably somewhere around there. But Kid Capri was tearing it up. Rakim was, yeah. And it felt, because it was a small venue and a Monday night, like, I don't think a lot of people knew about it. It was kind of weird, you know?
It's weird.
But it felt so
intimate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah. Bless the mic. God.
Rakim, man. But yeah, what year was the, I was going to ask you, the Gangstar and the Public Enemy, which one's?
The Public Enemy, that was the one that, at Rainbow Heights with Dead Poets Society.
Rainbow down,
yeah.
DG?
Yeah. Rainbow Heights. They did a Def Jux show there too.
Oh yeah.
And
what year was the Public Enemy?
Public Enemy, it was like '99, before 2000. '99. That's when they were doing shows there, like, regularly. And people still, to this day, they're like, what do you mean Public Enemy was at Rainbow? I'm like, yeah, Rainbow Heights. That small place? Yeah. No S1Ws? Yes, S1Ws. S1Ws. Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
Griff, the whole gang. Dead Poets Society from Toronto.
I know they did a lot of reggae shows there, but I didn't know there was a lot of, that they actually had hip-hop shows there as well.
Mishy Me, Us, Dead Poets Society, Public Enemy. And then, I think about a month later, they did the Def Jukki show. So Mr. Liff, LP,
yeah,
the whole gang. She was dope.
Crazy.
Def Jukki's.
I was way underage. I thought I had to, it's really interesting to hear about, because that's literally two blocks away from my house. So,
yeah, it's crazy. Close. It's close.
Oh, man. That's cool, man. That's cool.
But that spot we were at for Magnum's thing, man, that was that's a nice spot.
Red Dread.
Yeah, man, Red Dread's got a... You need to holler at him if you need a spot, man. Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. Something, yeah, I want to clarify real quick. We were talking about the Bots Dynasty, you know, staple in Montreal rap, as far as I'm concerned. You know, just younger guys under us. But I was saying that Prowl passed away, but it's actually Slang that passed away. So rest in peace to Wayne. I just wanted to clarify that, you know what I mean? So. Yeah, so the Bots Dynasty, for me, were really instrumental to hip-hop, Montreal hip-hop's legacy, and, you know, the DG Dynasty, because they're guys, you know, I'm partial because they're from my hood, they're from DG, and, you know, they're the next generation after us, younger than us, but, you know, carrying the torch, for sure, and... Again, another reason I'm partial is because, you know, Blaster is part of the crew. Sosa, part of the crew. Mr. Len, you know, is part of the crew. And they, you know, they became, you know, family to me. All the other guys, too, like Sekou, Prowl, his brother is Manchild, right? So... There was already legacy to the guys that were in the group. You know, and Slang, you know, was... They formed Voltron, you know? Jet, Slang, and they all sounded... They had their own style. You know? They had their own style. Like... You know what I'm going to say. They were like a young Wu, in my opinion, meaning that each of them brought a different style to the table, right? You know, like anytime they performed, it was special. Like usually, not usually, but I've seen some crews that are, you know, 5-7 people deep, and it's a shit show. Shit show in some cases. These guys had it down. They knew not to step on each other's vocals. They knew just the right amount of backup to put in so you're not overpowering the guy, the lead vocal at the time. Like, I've seen bands that do that. You know, they'll hire a bunch of musicians. They'll get on stage, and the guitar is trying to play louder than the trumpet. And, yeah... And they're looking at each other like, yeah, you know? So these guys had, you know, they had a controlled chaos. Controlled chaos is the best word for it, because from every verse, each rapper's verse, it was bringing you to different places, but in the same context. Yeah, I can't even say, like, you know, like, this guy was probably the best, or this guy was, like, they came together and created that those moments. Yeah, shout out to the Bots Dynasty. Look out for the wrestler, guys. Yeah, salute, man. Well, yeah, because another, you know, important thing that happened when, you know, we got exposed to rap music, urban music, which includes, you know, the parties weren't just rap music parties. It was the best R&B music at the time, like real, real great music at the time that these DJs were doing. So, I was getting into clubs early, before I was supposed to, and all in the name of, you know, my love for everything music. And it's before I even knew what was going on the plateau at the time. So it was like what I call now old downtown. So Crescent Street, Atwater, you know, they had bars like Station 10, which was more rock. Punk bands and stuff like that, and then you go to Crescent, and then you have all the, you know, higher end clubs at the time, that you could go to. But there was one gem in the city that was instrumental to a lot of my, to me and a lot of my friends, which was the Thunderdome, which is, was located right next to a Chez Paré on Stanley. Y'all could look up Chez Paré, figure it out, you know? But that club was a three-floor venue. On one floor, you had the Limelight, which was the place where everybody goes to do their dance parties, all the big DJs at the time that were playing on the radio, so Mario, all those guys, they'd have nights at the Limelight. And then upstairs from there was the Thunderdome. Now, that's where the gem comes in, because this place was all the top hip-hop DJs that we talked about already, LDG, Tough, you know, Flight, a bunch of DJs that were spinning hip-hop and urban music at the time. And on any given night, you'd run into, you know, your people from around the hood, but as well as like some of the, you know, top rappers at the time. So they had this thing that they did. It was like a tournament, basically a rap battle tournament. So you go, you battle, you win that one, you come back next week till you reach the finals. And Chuck Ice was the guy. It was the guy at the time. And Tate was the guy at the time. And, you know, it was, that's, that was a classic battle that a lot of people remembered. But all I have to say that this place was magical for that reason and so much more, like the exposure to the music downtown area. And, you know, we were younger at the time, but we had to have our music. So, and they get to know us, like the bouncers and everybody. So they knew. And then the first floor, if I'm not mistaken, was open all day. So they'd show movies there. They'd show concerts, sports events on that floor. So you could go on a, you know, after school, watch a, you know, a couple of movies on the screen, just knowing that, you know, upstairs is the Thunderdome. So I know cats that skip school just to, you know, go hang out and, yeah, hang out. Same thing with, you know, the movies, you know, sneaking in and letting your friends in. And then, because some of the theaters at the time, they had like six different movie rooms, right? So you could spend the whole day there. You go from one, bounce to the other, to the other, to the other. And we'd spend our time outside. You know, it's easier to get films now, but that was part of being out with your people and your boys. So, yeah, the Thunderdome was influential to us a lot because, you know, we're seeing live rap from people that were here. It wasn't an artist that was flown in. It's somebody representing Montreal and a bunch of guys like battling, and this was would go on for a while till there was one. So that was a amazing, amazing spot. And another one that I remember is that when I was hanging with, when I was part of CBF, just before it became Shades of Culture, going through the transition, we used to go to this place called Quasimodo. They had open mic night that Rev put me on to. He'd already been going, so they had open mic. You could go there. They run instrumentals and you go and rap. You know, our boy Gucci boy, shout out to him. He was one of the first guys that I saw doing it at Quasi. That was right on Saint Laurent, right at the corner of like I think Prince Arthur. So right near on top of where Four Brothers was. It's now called the Trash Bar. Before that, it's the Purple Haze, where all of us worked at. Choice, Rev, myself. We worked there. We rehearsed there as well. We were bus boys there. But before that, it was Quasimodo. So it's weird. We became attached to that building throughout most of our rap career, and we never thought anything of it. But you know, now that I think about it, it's like, yeah, it's kind of odd, that building, when we did three different, you know, generations in that building. So we honed our craft, but before that, we saw other people that were already doing it. So you know, I guess that building was haunted with the hip hop. You know, no matter what it became Purple Haze was a retro rock bar, but we were in there, you know, three times a week practicing, keeping the ghosts alive. You know, yeah. At one point we actually built a stage upstairs because we were doing a lot of local shows. One of the big shows that we did was a local show. We brought a whole bunch of cats. We had J Soul and Soul Tribe. We had Mr. FaZe. We had Shades. We had a bunch of other local bands that came out and performed for that night. We had an in with the program director at Much Music, Michelle Geister at the time, and she actually did us a solid. She brought her camera crew down to the Purple Haze for a show that we organized, because we're always doing shows, always performing, and we had all our locals come in and perform. Like J Soul and the Soul Tribe was like a big group.
So what you're talking about, is that the clip that's on YouTube when you guys are on Rap City with Michael Williams?
No, that's another time. But through that connection, and it's weird, through that connection, that's how we got in touch with Michelle Geister. And because we were playing, you know, Toronto, Ottawa, that circuit that I was talking about earlier, played a lot. And, you know, we had disciplined. Well, you know, we learned to make sure that when we show up, we have an interview lined up. You know, they have our music playing before we get there on the airways. Learning, you know, tricks about the business early, and it helped us. But fast forward, Michelle Geister brought the whole camera crew down and had us. There's an interview on it on Much Music with us sitting in the Purple Haze, and you know, talking to a lot of the groups. So we got a lot of exposure because of that. Arcade and Death Threat, shout out to Ziplox as well, was just part of CKUT fam, right? So we got a good amount of exposure just through that on Much Music. So now Toronto and, you know, other parts of Canada can see, yeah, there's something going on here. You know, there's something really, really popping in the city. And again, that was in the Purple Haze. So it was pretty good time for everybody. And then from there, we just kept the lines open and stayed in touch with, you know, Michelle. And whenever we were on tour, which was a lot, we always make sure we, you know, they know we're coming. Oh, yeah, but at the Thunderdome, the thing I was talking about, the magic of it, but there was something that was special about it, because it wasn't just rappers that were there. You know, it was, we had rockabillies that were there, and we had, you know, people from different walks of life that just all vibe to the music. And, you know,
they were there regardless.
Regardless. And that was the special thing about it. You didn't have to be a rapper or, you know, live in a certain part of the city to come experience this thing in the middle of downtown, neutral ground, right?
So, yeah. Did you ever get the chance to perform at Thunderdome back in those times?
No. Thunderdome was actually like,
it was just the learning ground.
It was the learning ground. I wasn't rapping. I was just in awe of what this place was giving me, you know? And we'd leave the St. Catharines dances in LaSalle that we were talking about earlier and get on the metro and make our way downtown and go to the Thunderdome. and, you know, and hang out there. Otherwise, we'd leave and, you know, go hang out at McDonald's, and then there would be ciphers. So our boy Richard used to make beats on the table, so like lunch table style, right? But he was nice with it. He was nice with it. And so ciphers would take off in the middle of McDonald's, you know what I mean? And nobody would say anything, but he's just nodding, loving it. And the Metro ride on the way downtown was the same thing. So on the Metro, I don't know if you realize it or not, but when you bang on those windows,
yeah,
bass comes out of there.
Definitely.
And if you
definitely.
Use the edge,
a little plastic.
You got yourself a kick and a snare. Yo, Richard would just tear this thing up, man, to pieces, man. And dope beats. And then, you know, Chucky would start rhyming and other MCs would start jumping in. And we're on the Metro on our way downtown. It was like another one of those moments, man. Like, you'd swear it was New York. You swear it was New York, you know, but we have plastic trains that got iron horses, but it was that energy, it's real. And it's, you know, it doesn't stay in one place.
Yep. Can't hold it back.
Nope. Can't hold that back at all. So, you know, that's why to this day I push the movement. Face changes, it grows, you know, goes through motions, but still remains, you know, part of my life till this day. As long as there's bars out there, yeah, I'm interested. I want to hear that. You know what I mean? A lot of the record shops, like I'm not even a DJ, but I used to go with Orion and some of the guys to the record shops that they had at the time, like Chin Fat. Which I think N.O.J. and Eddie Lewis, who I went to high school with. I graduated with Eddie Lewis. Big DJs at the time. His son's on his way up now, too, apparently. So, yeah, they were running the record store.
I know with Chin Fat, you could see if you look up GZA on Much Music on YouTube, you'll see GZA and Killer Priest touring in Canada, and they caught them in Montreal at that time, you know. And you can see a clip of the live show,
and
they're doing an interview with GZA and Killer Priest in Chin Fat live in the store.
Another, you know.
What's cool about looking at old interviews on Much Music, that's when a lot of times they'll meet up in a record store.
Yeah,
you know, we were talking about Citizen Kane, the whole documentary,
right?
And in that documentary, they're doing an interview at Music Plus, in the old Taboo.
Yeah,
so it's interesting to see those things and you know, the way things were back.
Yeah,
then.
And you know, the record shops, it was a place to hang out.
But yeah, man, you were about to go in and talk about Chin Fat, and I'll let you continue that.
Yeah, the owners. So, like, it's just that, again, it proves that it's a machine. Like, LDG, all the DJs would go to New York, bring the music back, and then these stores would then, you know, either they'd have it already or they'd make sure to get it, but then trickle down to the DJs. That are spinning, they go to Chin Fat, they go to the record shops to get their records, so it keeps the machine going. Without that, it's stagnant. We're not moving forward. So it was thanks to all the wheels, all the cogs, they kept the machine going, and of course the way, you know, we collaborate together.
And what other record stores do you remember from back then?
Oh, man, I was trying to remember. Storm and Rev would be...
Better for that.
Yeah, better for that, for sure. It's just slipping my mind right now.
Just remember it as, you know, part of the everyday life and hip-hop living at that time.
Yeah, And yeah, and making sure our records are in the right places. Like, and again, Chin Fat is before HMV and all those places, before it became, you know, a supermarket kind of thing for music. It was like, you know, independents, they'd ask us to get the records and we give it to them. The reason Chin Fat came to mind is because, you know, I graduated with Eddie and those guys. So they also, you know, sold our records for us, so it's part of the fam. But yeah, you know, collaborating was essential in its early stages.
And talking about records, let's talk about what you brought up to me earlier, Zubone Records.
Yeah.
Which was basically, you had Arcade, Misery, Gundy, and At Random. And, you know, that was the lineup on Zubone Records at the time.
Yeah, so I don't know. I should, like, one of the first groups that we actually worked with back in the days was At Random. The DJ, Nike Eldon, at the time, was co-producing with Haig, who